listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Your Ultimate Life tonight. I am so excited. This is the program dedicated to help you discover and serve your divine with your divine gifts and create that life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Today I've got a spectacular guest. I love her already. We were just talking for a few minutes ahead of time. Welcome to the show, Ianla.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm just thrilled. I'm excited and I'm just stoked that we get to talk about the most important topic in the world, which is love.
Love. Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you too. So what's that? I'm sorry.
I said happy love day.
Yes. So I'm going to start with a question that goes right to the heart, no pun intended, of all this. Why do you, I've looked at your work and you said you looked at my books and stuff. Why do you do what you do? What drives you to get into the heart and love and down in the hard stuff? Why do you do that?
You would have to ask me a hard question, right? Why? I don't know there's a why. It's my purpose. It's my, you know, one of the great tenets of the recovery world is you make your issue your cause. If you have an issue, it ultimately becomes your cause, which is why many people who go through recovery then become recovery counselors or sponsors. So I lived a loveless life. The big people in my life were too busy managing their own pain to really love me, to tell me they love me, to show me love. And the kind of love that they showed me was so dysfunctional and painful. So when I woke up, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing to be awake, awoke, or whatever they call it now. When I woke up, my mission became to just do, give, be everything as a gift of love. So my mission is to show people love, which is why I call everybody beloved. Be love. Yeah.
I noticed that you sent me an email in our communication ahead of time and you called me beloved. And I thought, what a kind, tender expression of that. And it was just about mundane stuff, graphics or whatever. And there it was, beloved.
Yeah.
Well, tell me the different kinds of work that you do. You said your mission is to be love and to give love and to help people not suffer as much as they would otherwise.
Yeah.
Tell me the kinds of things that you are doing.
Well, my purpose is to teach. I teach. And teaching, you know, we're taught in this Western society is about putting information in. And the true message of teaching or education is to draw information out. Because the truth is we have it all inside. But we have forgotten, or we didn't know that we knew, or it's covered up with so much stuff. So I am an educator, and I am a spiritual technician. So I use spiritual technologies to educate people about the truth and the love that they already are.
I love that. Spiritual technologies to educate people about the truth and the love that they already are. So everybody write that one down, because that one's good. I saw a post that you did, I don't know if it was yesterday or day before coming up to this, and it was about prayer.
Yeah.
And when you said spiritual technologies, of course, I thought one of the ways, most important ways of communication with the divine, whatever people call it, is with that prayer, the reaching up of our soul. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, I love to pray. I'll pray for anything. I'll pray for the sparrows outside. I pray for the squirrels that tear my bird houses down. I need the birds and the squirrels come and throw them to the ground and eat the seeds. It is. It's communion, communication. It's putting yourself or allowing yourself to be in a position of vulnerability to the divine. Whatever that is for you. I always say the God of your understanding, your G-O-D, whatever that is. And it's, for me, prayer is one of the most intimate communications that the soul can have with its creator. Usually, you know, people have a hard time asking other people for help. But I don't care, the biggest, hardest, roughest, toughest guy or girl on the planet, they don't have a problem asking their creator for something. They just don't talk about it. Oh, God, please help me. Oh, God, do this. Oh, Lord, won't you? You know? But if we could do it consciously and with humility and allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, to allow our souls to communicate with the divine, and then listen. Listen afterwards. Don't just get up and pray and go run off and play tennis, but give yourself 3, 5, 10 minutes to just sit and listen. You'll also get a response. And I think that's the part that people miss. They miss waiting for the response. You know, prayer becomes like sending a text.
It doesn't go ding when it comes back. No. You know what I mean? You got to be paying attention. So you said a couple of really important words. And you made a really important observation. When the pandemic came or when something bad happens, we have all this conversation about, you know, getting everything out of our lives that's religious. Yet when something like that happens, all of a sudden it's God this and God that and help, and we don't know what else to do. Why do we do that? Why do we wait until we're dying before we figure out we're really connected and we really need this?
Well, first of all, because we're just full of our bloated human nothingness. We're just full of it, you know? And because there's a part of us that knows. There's a part of us that knows that we are connected to something greater, something grander. Otherwise, Kellen, we wouldn't get up every day. Who would get up to do this craziness every day? Some part of us knows that we're here for something greater, grander. We just get caught up in the sensory, material world. But there's a part of us that knows. And when these things happen that our mind can't comprehend, when 5 police officers kill a man, or when an earthquake sucks up 30,000, or when a disease that they don't even know where it came from shuts the whole country down. Miss Corona was the only thing that I know of in my 70 years that has ever shut the church down. Nothing has ever shut the church down. Corona said, wait a minute, hold up. I got something for you. So because a part of us knows, and when we get to the edge of our bloated human nothingness, that's where we turn. But as long as, you know, we're looking cute and everything, and we got toilet paper and paper towels, we don't need anything greater and grander than us, you know? And also because a lot of it is couched in religion, and so many of us were religiously abused, you know, had stuff forced down our throat and frightened. We were frightened out of God, you know. Who wants a God that's going to pluck it out thine eye?
you know, I think you're right. Religiously abused is an interesting, I haven't heard it said that way before, but it resonates. And I agree with you. You said another thing in the description that's a really important word, I think, and I want you to expand on that. You talked about when we connect with the divine, you talked about being vulnerable.
Vulnerable, yeah.
Two things. Why is that so hard? And two, why is it important?
Well, when you're vulnerable, you are available. You are accessible. And you are accepting, available, meaning I'm not all over the place, I'm not here. Accessible, meaning that you can receive, and accepting that there's something to receive. That's why vulnerability is important. You're not functioning on your intellect, on your degrees, on your good looks, on your, you know, your cleaner teeth and fresher breath. You're just available, accessible, and acceptable. Because the divine energy can then access the deepest part of you, the soul. So that is why, how it's possible. Why it's important is because vulnerability and humility are, I think, kissing cousins. If you have one, you can have the other. And if you have one, you do have the other. When we're humble, meaning of service, first of all, that's what humility means, of service. And when we're not in our grandioseness as humans, in our bigness, in our intelligence, in our all of the wonderfulness that we go into, when we're not in that and we're humble and vulnerable, all things are possible. As long as we're running the show, there's some things that just aren't possible because we can't make them happen. But when you're vulnerable, you're open to another level of energy and experience. That's what I believe.
I love that. As long as we're running the show, I guess I'd probably say it even a little bit harsher. As long as we're running the show, we're going to make a mess out of it all.
Oh,
when
yeah.
we finally figured out we can't handle this, then we let the real important power take over. Today, we want to talk about love, and this leads right into it. Do you have a definition that you use? I'm not trying to have you invent one or something. Do you have, when people say, what is love, or how do you love, or talk about that, what is love?
Well, what love is one thing. How you do it is another.
Okay. All right. Talk about both. So talk about both.
What love is to me is everything. All. Mm-hmm. Everything is love. It really is, because for me, God, source creator, is everything, created everything. So there is love in everything, and everything at its core is love. Even, you know, my earrings, someone loves to make jewelry, so they made these. So there's love in there, you know, my glasses, your shirt, your tree of life. Mm-hmm. It's all love. Somebody did something that brought them joy in the moment. That's love. So for me, love is all. Everything is love. Now, how you love? Now, that requires a college degree.
Okay, well, then let's get to it.
I think the first thing is for love is unconditional positive regard. What do I mean by that? Meaning, as you show up, just as you are, I'm going to accept you just as you are. I'm not looking for what's wrong with you. I'm not looking for what needs to be different. I'm not looking for how you can be better. I'm not looking just as you are. Kellen, I'm going to accept you. That's the first thing. Unconditional positive regard. The other thing for me, love, is that I'm always going to see you higher. I'm always going to see you higher because I love you. And I know as human beings, and our bloated nothingness, we can have bad behavior.
You think?
We can have very bad behavior. I had a big, big argument. Not argument. Somebody was upset with me. I didn't argue with him. I just said, okay, that's my new thing. Okay. When I said to them, we were talking about the Tyree Nichols case, and they were just... I don't even know what the word is, the five officers. And trust me, their behavior was depraved and indifferent. Okay.
Yeah, no question about that.
But I said to them, I hear you and I can get on that step with you. But my heart goes out to their mothers. I'm a mother. And if my son behaved that way, I think I would just gouge my eyes out with a plastic spoon. Is anybody thinking about their mothers? And if you think about their mothers, then you have to think about them. So I said to them, the person, they deserve love too. And that was it. They said, oh no, how could you? And I said, just see them higher. We've all had moments that are less than our best. Now we may not have done that, but everybody has a different purpose and a different walk. We don't know what's going to come out of this. This may change the entire police state of this world. We don't know. But we don't have to knit them a sweater, but we can still send them love. Love will be the thing that heals them. And in the meantime, I'm going to pray for their mothers.
I just am thrilled to hear you say that about their mothers and whoever else cared for them, because they did have others that cared for them, who will have seen that and just had their hearts torn out as they watched those things happen. And that is there. We just yesterday had this business at the University of Michigan. I don't even know what happened yet.
No, and he just lost it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as human beings, I think it's Sting that sang a song, Fragile. Mm-hmm. No one ever really knows how fragile we are. Sting sang that song, and we are as human beings. And that's why we all deserve love. And again, because I love you doesn't mean I'm going to condone or support or celebrate your bad behavior. But I'm not going to withdraw my love. I'm going to see you higher and know that you can reach into that higher place and you will still have to experience the consequences of your behavior. But I can still love you. People, they don't want to do that. They want to get mad at you and stay mad at you. That's not how you love. Sometimes you love people enough to walk away from them and leave them alone. But that doesn't mean you stop praying for them or wanting the best for them. Yeah.
So I see you higher. So when I talk to people here, I like to hear things and emphasize them. So see you higher. To love someone is to see them higher. Unconditional positive regard, accepting you just as you are. And I have to say, when you popped on the screen before, you know, the exchange and moment, just of that connection right there was all that. Just, you know what I mean? It was just that. And it was a fabulous moment. And to then make a choice to see somebody higher, because it's not automatic.
No.
You know,
love is a choice.
That's where I want to go right now, because the people that say, you know, someone that does something bad, whether it's those five officers or others, the people that invaded Ukraine or whoever, they got to, you know, they should be tarred and feathered and, you know, the list goes on. All these bad things should happen to them. And then there's another choice, and the choice is I am going to love them anyway, to see them higher, to hope, pray, send energy that they heal. This is not dismissing consequences, like you said. When someone comes to you that's sincere, and I'm not, you know, they're sincere, but they have a history or a habit or a story that is contrary to that, how do you start with the process of helping them understand they have that choice and then to begin to make it in small and then larger ways to see people higher, to love them?
If they want to make that choice, first of all, when people are engaged in a bad behavior or self-destructive behavior or harmful behavior to anyone else, they have to really recognize the pain that they're causing themselves. And I say to them, what must a person think of themselves to do this to themselves? What must a person be thinking? You know, that nobody cares, I'm not important, nobody, it doesn't matter what I do, I don't matter, whatever. Okay, so that's what we have to heal. That's what needs to be healed. You got to love yourself enough to know that every single thing that you do matters. Every single thing that you say matters. So if you're causing this pain to yourself or to someone else, it's because you don't think you matter. You don't know how important you are. You don't know how valuable you are. So we need to start there. We have to build your sense of esteem, value, worth, respect, love, all of that, so that your internal infection doesn't affect others. Because when you don't love yourself, when you don't value yourself, when your esteem is so low, you're infected with self-denial and self-hatred, and that will infect other people. I told somebody the other day, you know, dysfunction is a disease and it's catching. You can catch a dysfunction. So yeah, you got to start there. You don't have to do anything. Support the person in seeing how their lack of love, respect, value, worth in themselves is the only thing causing the behavior. And that doesn't matter what it is. And particularly people who have substance abuse problems. I know a lot of them has just lost touch with self, or they're denying some part of self, and they look to the substance as an escape because they've lost touch with themselves. Nobody who really loves themselves or knows themselves is going to hurt themselves. You're just not. You know, that's like sticking your hand in the fire. Or even, you know, one of the things that I've learned that's just been very enlightening for me, the whole notion of cutting. Young people who cut, they cut so that they can feel. They cut so that they can feel. Something has gone on and they shut down. And a lot of them cut so that they know they can feel. I said, wow, that's amazing. I didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah. That is interesting because I happen to have a very close relative who had a mate, a spouse who was cutting. And so that is happens to be up close and personal. You know, there were years when I went through bouts of addiction and stuff like that. And people ask often, even in recovery programs and everything, you know, what was your drug of choice? And what I finally said, my drug of choice was self-loathing. Mm-hmm. I needed to hate myself. And then the whatever the substance was, that was just handy to make the pain go away. But yeah. The need was to hate myself.
Yeah, and because there was something you believed about you, some you lost touch with your goodness, your divinity, your nobility. I know I've worked with a lot of people. And the other thing is, you know, my drug of choice was guilt. And they don't have a treatment program for that. My drug of choice was guilt. And the way I got into guilt was through shame. So I would do things and behave in ways and engage in behaviors and do all sorts of things that I felt ashamed of. And then I would get guilty because I did those things. They don't treat you for that. You know, there's so many things that people are addicted to, their drug. Some people are addicted to struggling. Some people are addicted to lack and restriction. Because again, they've lost touch with or no knowledge of their divinity, their nobility, their self with a capital S. So we engage in these behaviors to distract us from going within and connecting with that part.
So I have a question that I like to ask, and that is I have a definition for the ultimate life, which is the name of the program, and I call that living a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. Yes. That you create by serving with your divine gift. And there's two parts to this question. How would Yanla define her ultimate life?
My ultimate life is serving my creator and the creator's people with love and excellence. And having fun in the process.
And I love the fun part. So the second question that follows on is, when we talk about that, lots of people hear us and they say, yeah, that's fine for you because you've whatever and you're where you are. I want to ask, do you believe that if people want to, they can make the changes so they can have their own version of that ultimate life? Do you believe that's possible or is that just hype?
Absolutely. And everybody doesn't have to write a book and be a motivational speaker or have a talk show or a TV show.
No, we don't.
No, we don't. That's what everybody thinks, you know? No, because there are some dedicated and angelic nurses, you know, that we need them. There are some committed and just divine teachers. You know, teach those little kindergarten babies with their little snotty noses. Oh,
right.
You know, they're bartenders, you know.
Imagine the stories they hear, right?
I think that everybody has a gift and that they can mold and shape and craft so that not only is, see, the thing is, we're programmed and conditioned in this society to take our gifts or our talents and skills. Our talents and skills to serve other people, and in response, we get a paycheck or we get money. But when you're living your ultimate life, you take your talents, your skills, and your gifts, and you serve for the joy of it. That's why you serve, for the joy of it, not for what you're going to get in return. And because you're doing it for joy, you get more in return. And people don't understand that.
So I want to dig into that a little bit, because you said talents and skills, and then you added the piece of gifts.
Yes.
And you added it with this delicious chewing of that word, and I love that. Tell me about that, the skills for which we get paid, and then the gifts, which, tell me, I have a thought when you say that, but what is that beautiful word that you said, you added the gifts and the joy?
I think that a skill is something we learn. That we've learned, we're taught. You know, some people can be a skilled craftsman or a plumber, or, you know, the skill, the teachers go to school to learn the skills of teaching. That's one thing. But your skill to be able to use it with excellence and proficiency, that's a talent. There's lots of people who can sing, but not all of them sing, you know, for a living or for money. They haven't necessarily turn that skill into a talent, or that hasn't elevated to a talent. So to be able to take your skill and elevate it, to do it with proficiency and excellence, that's a talent. But when that thing is what resonates in your soul, when that is what the soul came here to do and to use, then that's your gift. You know, that's a gift. I can sing. I just don't sound good.
Okay, I haven't heard you sing, so I won't even have an opinion.
I'm telling you, I can sing. It ain't a skill or a talent, nor is it a gift. You know, you take a Whitney Houston, you take a Andreas Bordicelli or whatever his name is. Gift. That's a gift. That thing comes from the soul. And then they brush it up. So for me, like I said, the skill is something you learn. The talent is when you elevate the skill to a level of perfection and expertise, mastery in a way. But when that skill is then infused with the energy of the soul, that's when it becomes a gift. And we take singing. You know, for example, when I was a young girl, everybody said to me, "Oh, you talk too much. Shut up. You talk too much. Go somewhere and sit down. You're always talking. Be quiet. Shut up. You talk too much." And now people pay me very well to hear me speak. My gift. It was my gift. I didn't know what it was. And you'll find very often that people will try to talk you out of your gift. "Oh, you can't do that. You ain't going to make no money doing that. Nobody's going to pay you to do that." Well, maybe they don't have to. Because see, what I do, I would do for free. I would do it every day, all day. And I did it for free during the pandemic. I got right online and talked to people every single day, 10 to 11 every day. I called it the antiviral message.
Well, bless your soul for doing that and other things that you do. I want to talk about gifts and its connection to divinity and love. Like, one of the things I say all the time, and it sounds like you agree, is that the divine, our creator, gave each of us gifts. Yeah. And the way I think about it is, if we're created with that love, intentionally, lovingly created, then I can only imagine that those gifts were given intentionally, carefully, and lovingly as we got ready to come to this experience. Does that sound right to you?
I do believe that. You know, I swing back and forth between whether the gift was given or whether we chose it and forgot.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
And everybody does. My best friend, you know what her gift is? Listening. Oh, my goodness. This woman hears the unspoken syllables of words, and then she can feed you back something like, "Where did you get that from?" But she just has the gift of listening. And then being able to respond in a way that just takes you to a whole nother level. So I do believe everybody has a gift. And I frequently say that your purpose is your passion, not your job. Your purpose, which always entails your gift, is your passion, what you're passionate about. not your job. So many people think that their gift and their purpose is tied to a paycheck. And it isn't always. It isn't always. Sometimes you have to use your gifts and your purpose over here while you're working over there to pay the rent. And that's okay. That's okay.
That's okay. That I just want to emphasize that. So many people, they'll come to me as a coach and probably to you too in different capacities and say, well, I found my gift or I think I have, and they want to sort of jump off the cliff and quit doing everything else and then go do this thing. And somehow magically the universe or God or whatever's going to provide, they don't think about transition or they don't think about the development, or maybe it's okay just to have a gift that you give and love and be and have another thing that you do because you can to get paid, and they somehow think that's not okay.
Yeah, no. I happen to be fortunate that my purpose, my passion, and my paycheck were all tied together. Mm-hmm. Once I found it, took me a while, but I would do this if I had to go out tomorrow and get a job. I don't know what I would do, but I would get one. You know, I mean, I'm an attorney by trade, but I haven't practiced law in over 40 years. But I guess I could go. Somebody would hire me. But people, again, let your purpose be your passion, not your paycheck. And like you said, you can do it over here because you love it. And if they knew what I knew, they would want to keep it over here and not tie it to a paycheck where somebody else is going to monitor it and market it and tell you what you can do and can't do, what you can say and can't say, have this contract and that kind of, you know, please. So it really is okay.
So I want to dive back into love for a minute. In the beginning, you said love is everything. And I actually agree with that. I say something like love is literally the glue that holds everything together. Also, because contention, negativity, anger, that tends to blow stuff up. And compassion and love tends to put stuff together. So why is it that we're having such a hard time cultivating the very essence and substance of our being and the thing that glues us together?
Because we're programmed and conditioned and socialized to reach out before we reach in. Where are we taught to reach in? Because the love is not out here. I mean, it is. But unless you bring your love, I bring my love, he brings their, we all bring our love that we are, bring awareness and knowledge and embodiment of that love, it's not going to be there. And we're taught to reach out. To look out, you know, we're taught to the sensory world, the intellectual world. We're not taught to the heart center, to the love. We're not taught to do that. And so, you know, we've just gotten off track, really off base. And, you know, the people who do that, you know, the monks and the gurus and, you know, the people off in the convents and stuff, they hold that vibration, but we can do it also. We don't love each other enough to say good morning when we're passing in the street, you know, or you cut me off on the freeway and then I'm going to chase you down and shoot you. You know, that's external stuff. If you knew who you were, you would just wouldn't behave that way. Molesting children and I could give you a list. I know you know the list. But that's because we're all externally referenced and not internally referenced. And also, we have to understand that in the beginning, God created all of it. There's a polarity to everything. So there's love, there's fear. I mean, there's love, there's hate, because it's all in the same continuum. It's just at different levels of the continuum. So in the beginning, there was anger and there was fear. Cain and Abel, a classic example of anger. You know, one brother killed right. another because his gift was accepted and his wasn't. You know, right. Disobedience. That was right in the beginning. Don't eat that apple. And that's the very thing. <that's>, yeah. And, you know, dishonesty. Where are you, Adam? Oh, I'm the woman you gave me. She gave me the apple. You know, lying, right? How are you going to lie to God?
I don't know. Sometimes I think we pretend he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah, you know. And so it was there in the beginning, and now it's just magnified 6 billion times. But it's all on the same polarity. But we are being forced, I believe. I could be very wrong, but when I look at what's going on, from it happened, started before the pandemic, but it's just intensifying, from the wildfires to the pandemic to the earthquakes to the rains and the mudslides, we're being forced into a position of humility where we're really going to have to restructure how we do what we do in every area of our lives. You know, never mind the horrific things that humans are doing to each other, because then we can take the court and punish them, you know, law and order society. But what are we going to do? Who are we going to get about that earthquake? What are we going to do about that?
You know, it feels like the divine God has invited us to understand. You've said a couple of times, and I really love it, if people knew who they were. So he's invited us to wake up, yeah, and to know who we are, and we keep ignoring him, and we keep ignoring him. And so the invitations get louder and louder and louder. And I think that's where you're going with that. We're being forced, yeah, with these things to just wake up.
I don't think it's a, I don't, it was an invitation. I think it was an invitation early 2000.
Okay.
Now I think it's a cease and desist order. Cease and desist your foolishment. Stop it.
Yes, totally.
Okay. I don't think it's an invitation. We got an invite and we didn't pay attention to it. Now the fires and the earthquakes and the wars and the war, that's man-made, but, you know, things are coming. California, who's not going to have some water soon? Colorado, somebody, there's no water. Oh, my Lord, it's just, and if you know who you are, you'll be okay.
So I want to go back to that. That's the third or fourth or I don't know how many times you talked about knowing who we really are. I want you to dive into that as deeply as you'd like to. Who are we? Why does it matter so much? I know it's three questions. Who are we? Why does it matter? And what happens when we know?
Yeah. God is I am. I don't know how else to say it. God is I am. That's who we are. That's who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm all that God is. And again, God is the continuum. Everything from light to dark. But my affirmation is, God is I am, let there be light. I don't want to be in the dark. Let there be light. I've been in the dark. And I had to scoop my little butt right down the other end of the pendulum. The continuum, because that dark was, it was hot down there. You know, God is I am. I am a demonstration of the life and power of the architect of the universe. That's how I explain it. And it's important for me to know that so that I never again dishonor, disrespect, devalue, minimize myself in ways that I had when I didn't know who I was, when I thought I was here and God was there. And God, the God of my understanding, oneness that I have with nature, when I thought it was just things that were just okay for me to do, things that I thought were okay for me to think. You know, I go all the way down to the thinking. I have certain things it's not okay to think, okay? Not okay to say. So when you know who you are and you understand the inherent power that you have, you just behave differently. You see people differently. When I think, my grandmother's a Native American, born on the reservation, to Tsleil-Waututh, Cherokee.
Okay.
And her father was a sharecropper in Virginia. Her mother was born on the reservation. So my grandmother grew up in the early 1900s in Virginia, went from South Carolina to Virginia. Father was a sharecropper. At 9, my grandmother was raped by the sharecropper's son. And when she went home and told her father beat her because she had gone beyond the boundary she was supposed to go. But when you're a little brown girl or a little red girl and the white sharecropper's son calls you, you go, because that's how you're programmed and conditioned. And when he rapes you and you go home and tell your father, he's not beating you just because you went beyond the boundary. He's beating you to take out his anger because he can't say anything to that white sharecropper about his son raping his daughter. So I grew up with that reality. And I grew up with the reality for a long time that as a brown, red girl, white people were bad. White people were wrong. My grandmother was a domestic. She worked for some really famous people. She was a master chef and a housekeeper. And that's how she supported my brother and I, by cooking and cleaning. When I was five, I used to stand on a box in her, I don't know what you call her employer's house. She called them her madam's house. And I ironed sheets and pillowcases. And they used to say, don't let her touch the wall. She'll make it dirty. So I couldn't move. This is how I grew up. So by the time I was a young teenager in the 60s and the Black Panthers said, let's off whitey, I said, yes.
Right.
No, yes. And then I had to restructure that. I had to restructure that because holding that much anger and that much, it wasn't really anger. It was hurt. It was sorrow. I had been taught shame and guilt of who I was as a female of color, as a female in poverty. My grandmother was forced to pass as Black rather than be a Native American. It was easier for her to be Black than it was for her to be red. And that's what I grew up with. And I blamed them. And as I woke up, I had to restructure that. And the only thing, two things that helped me do it were love and forgiveness. Forgiveness first and then love. Otherwise, I couldn't be sitting here talking to you, a white guy, thinking about what white guys did to my grandmother and my mother and my father. In that time, that's still alive in my cellular memory. So, and when I understand who I am as a child of God, as I understand who I am as a divine being, I know that all of that was purposeful. All of it was purposeful. Because if I didn't have that history, if I didn't have those stories and those experiences, I would have never learned the value of forgiveness. And I never know the joy of love, that I can love you, our dear friend, Steve Hardison, my Mormon brother.
Right. Okay. So I think Steve and Amy are watching tonight. He said he was good.
Oh, okay. You know. So you
can, hi, Steve.
I would never have been able to do that because I'd be alone in my head without adult supervision, making up stories. So when you know who you are, the first thing you do is you look higher for purpose, for meaning, for understanding. And yeah.
So easy. I love that. This is, I'm just going to repeat some things just because I want them to be heard loud. And you said purposeful. And so many people have had little and big and horrendous things in their own past, and they want to rail at life or God or whatever. And you just described terrible things. And yet you chose to say there was purpose because you would not have understood the power of forgiveness. And without you understanding the power of love and forgiveness, you wouldn't be able to help me or others watching this or people that you've helped as they see, because truth carries its own power. And so when you look at somebody and you say, I now understand the power of forgiveness, the walls shake because you speak truth.
Yeah. You know, if you go back and look at the bottom of my email, my signature line says, truth will correct all errors in my mind.
And you think I didn't see that? It just jumped off the page into my heart. So, yeah I loved it. Yes, it will.
And everything has a purpose because God is purposeful. And that's why we're all on that continuum. And we all have choice and free will. I could have chose to stay angry and Black and upset, but to raise it to love and to elevate it with truth and forgiveness, it gave me an entirely different frame of reference. And it opened my heart to an entirely different, just opened my heart to many other things, you know?
I want to just, we have a few minutes left. And when we started, you asked to talk about my purpose here. My purpose, help 50 million people discover their gifts. And everybody that's watched one of these knows that. And I like bringing people on and helping them do their work. So you said you had something going on March the 11th, and you wanted to talk about that. Yeah. And I want you to talk about it. So talk about it.
You know, one of the things that I've discovered is everything is a relationship. Our relationship with the divine, our relationship with each other. Everything is relationship. And so many of us have so few skills and tools about how to be in relationship, first with ourself, because you can only be with someone the way you're in relationship with yourself. And if you're waiting for someone, that famous line out of the Tom Cruise movie with Cuba Gooding, where he said, "You complete me." If you're waiting for somebody to complete you, that's a problem. It's not going to turn out well for you, but it's just everything is a relationship. I remember watching what was happening a couple of weeks ago in the House of Representatives, where they had to do that, those votes, those 15 votes. And I kept saying, these people are having a really bad relationship with each other, a bad relationship with themselves. Whether you're looking at the knee on the neck with George Floyd, you're looking at Putin and Ukraine, you're looking at those five officers and Tyree Nichols, it's all relationship. Because first of all, your relationship with yourself is going to govern and dictate how you deal with everybody.
100%.
There are skills, there are tools, there's truth that we need to know. So on March 11th, Spirit has guided me, because I would be eating my popcorn and minding my business on a Saturday. I'm going to do an all-day intensive workshop on relationships, all kinds of relationships. Because, you know, since the pandemic also, relationships have taken a big hit.
Yes.
People like, why am I married to you? Why are you here? And, you know, the electronic dating or the online dating and the life after lockup and relationships have taken a really big hit. So I just want to share with people, as a 3-time divorcee, twice from the same man.
Okay.
What I've learned about relationships. I've learned a lot, and it's all grounded in love. And it's all based on really us making conscious choices and decisions about who we choose to be as we relate to one another, who we choose to be. So that's March 11th. It's virtual, so people can come from all over the world.
Tell us how to find it.
Iyanla.com, Iyanla.com. You go to my Facebook page or my website. Is that what it's called? A website, right? Yeah, website.
It is a website.
Me and the technology, we no good friends.
So I couldn't be more strong in my both love of you and endorsing what you're presenting. Your relationship with yourself and who you choose to be in that is super critical. So anybody watching, go there and see and learn about the relationship with yourself. Because like she said, you can't have a relationship with anybody else better than the one you have with you. You can't love anybody else more than you love yourself. And that's where it starts. So go there and see.
And if you don't know who you are, that's the critical part. If you think you need somebody else to complete you, you know, one of the most beautiful relationships, I know three of them, but one of the most beautiful ones is Steve and Amy. They've been married since God left Chicago. And they got kids and grandkids and everything. And I know it's not hunky-dory, sweet and nice all the time, but the depth of commitment of their soul first to themselves and how they support each other in that. You know, how Steve supported Amy when she did, they sent me her beautiful writings on the book of Isaiah and just that. But, you know, to see them together when that, you can feel that energy. I know two other couples like that. But to live your ultimate life and to really use your gift, you have to know who you are and you have to be in good relationship with yourself. And every day, it's you just like you would argue with your husband or your wife. Some days you're not going to like you. I had a day like that the other day. I just didn't like me. I was behaving very badly. I just had to sit myself down. But to get to your ultimate life, and I believe, I could be wrong, but the better you are in relationship with your life, the more accepting you are of your gift and the more willing you are to share it. Because when you know who you are and your value and your worth, and when you know your purpose, you know your gift is not even for you. It's for the world. And because you love, you give. And you don't worry about what's coming back because you know it's going to come back somehow.
So I can't thank you enough. We've come to the end of our time, and I can't thank you enough for sharing your heart, your smile, your love, and your beautiful presence with us tonight. Thank you, Ianla.
Thank you for having me.
You are just welcome. I just couldn't encourage all of you tonight. Go back and listen again. Pick some pieces up. Pull those nuggets out. And get in relationship with yourself. You can't love anybody else more than you love yourself. And you can't have a better relationship than the one you have with yourself. And above everything else, realize who you really are. So you can move forward fast and create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.